Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real-life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at ritaschulte.com. That's S-C-H-U-L-T-E.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart.
Considering the devastation caused to our society by prescription drug abuse, patients and healthcare professionals alike need to become more educated about non-narcotic alternatives for pain management. In particular, we need to understand the emotional and even the spiritual factors that can contribute to pain, illness, and addiction, and treat those factors directly rather than trying to blot them out with mind-altering substances. In her 15 years of treating patients with musculoskeletal pain, Dr. Rita Hancock has developed highly effective and teachable ways for patients to help themselves out of addiction and pain through various emotional self-help techniques. And she's here today to share those methods with us. Dr. Hancock, welcome to Heartline.
Thank you.
How did growing up obese affect your self-esteem? And how did God turn that around in your life?
Well, I think you can guess, really, it was awful. I felt pretty bad about myself. I was always double with the other kids' weight and the last one picked for the teams in gym class. Let me put it this way. You know how some people grow up and have dreams about forgetting to go to a final exam from college? Well, I didn't dream like that. My bad dreams, my nightmares, were that I forgot to go to gym class. And I'm not kidding either. I mean, I never had a dream that I forgot to take a regular academic class. It was gym class that really stressed me out as a kid. It was awful.
Yeah. So were you made fun of? Were you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that had to do a lot to your own personal belief system right there.
It did, you know, and I assumed for the longest time in my young adulthood that I actually had low self-esteem because of my weight. But what's really interesting is later in life, as I matured my faith, I started asking a different question. Did my low self-esteem actually follow my obesity, or did it lead to it?
Oh, that's a great question.
Right? And it took me to be in my 40s before I started asking that question. Because when you think about it, if it isn't that you're obese when you're a kid, maybe it's that you feel unattractive or unathletic or dorky in some other way. I mean, it's always something. Nobody gets off scot-free. So if I wasn't obese as a kid, maybe it would have been something else. Maybe mommy or daddy would have drunk, or I would have been abandoned or neglected, or maybe I would have been adopted. You just never get off scot-free. Everybody exits childhood with some kind of baggage.
Yeah. Some kind of a wound.
Right. And that's why we all need the Lord.
Yeah. So what inspired you to write this book, Radical Wellbeing?
Well, Radical Wellbeing is my second book, and that really sprang out of my pain management practice. As you know, I'm a medical doctor, and pain management is my specialty. And I have so many patients, just so many, who not only have physical pain problems, but physical pain that results from emotional or spiritual issues. And I can't, in a 20-minute follow-up with a patient, really dive into a lot of these things. So when I identify a patient that has these emotional, spiritual roots to some of their pain, I like to be able to give them a book. And that's why I wrote Radical Wellbeing.
I love the book, Rita. And
thank you.
I love it because you talk a lot about false beliefs and the lies that we buy into. And those things lead us into a lot of the addictive patterns that we see today, whether it's food addictions, substance, pills, whatever we're talking about. How do these false beliefs affect us? Because uncovering them is key to walking in freedom in all areas of our lives.
Well, I think they can actually trigger us not only into behaviors like taking addictive substances, but they can actually cause physical pain. And when you think about it this way, it makes sense. Okay, let's say you're driving down the road and you're late, well, you know, you grip the steering wheel really hard, your shoulders all tense and everything, and you can literally feel the physical effects of that emotional tension that you carry. I mean, probably everybody's been in that situation.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the steering wheel and your knuckles are literally white because there's no blood going into them because you're squeezing the steering wheel so tight because you're late. I don't know if you've had that happen, but I've had that happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
You know, we hold this tension, tight muscles, and then we wonder at the end of the day why we feel like a train wreck.
Exactly. Well, what can happen is beliefs, false beliefs, beliefs that you hide in the subconscious because they make you feel so shameful and vulnerable, those beliefs can trigger the same sort of responses in your muscles. And I can tell that because, you know, I usually stand behind patients and I examine their backs and I'm feeling them. And I've noticed, depending on what we're talking about, they're more or less tense. So let's say, you know, Mrs. So-and-so's kid is on drugs. And Mrs. So-and-so is just going, you know, she has a lot of turmoil in her own life because of that. Well, you know, maybe she believes a lie that she's a failure, or, you know, she did something wrong, or she's a bad mother, she's a bad person in general because she screwed her kid up. Right, so I'm touching Mrs. So-and-so, and when I bring that up, like, so how's it going with your daughter or whatever, I just can feel the tension immediately build up, and she's unaware of it, but I can literally feel it with my hands. So what we think about, what we talk about, what we meditate on, if you will, literally affects the physical body. So do you have obsessive thoughts? Do you ruminate on things about how lowly you feel and all that? Well, if you do, then it's probably going to come out physically.
Absolutely. So what is all this actually doing to our muscles? Like, how does this even happen? Is it neurotransmitters? What cortisone? What is it that's getting released there that's not letting things work the way they need to work?
I think it's an inborn behavioral thing. If somebody is afraid, okay, what are they going to do? They're going to kind of hunch their shoulders over. If somebody feels depressed, they lower their head, okay? There are certain postures that we take on depending on how we feel. And if there wasn't such a thing, we wouldn't have body language. We wouldn't be able to watch a cartoon and know what emotion the cartoon character is feeling if we don't communicate through our posture. So whether we realize it or not, we're reading other people's posture. You know, we're sending out messages about how we feel about ourselves depending on how we stand, how we sit, how we hold ourselves. I have a patient, the guy literally turns beet red in 2 seconds if he's angry.
Mm.
And so you can read these things off of people. There are physical changes that happen depending on how we feel. And I think it's just how we're wired as people. We communicate a lot more than we realize through our body language.
Oh, absolutely. And I teach this to my clients all the time. And I think it's so awesome that you talk about this whole thing of, you know, we're holistic beings, body, soul, and spirit. And I think we don't realize how one thing affects the other. And we really need to educate people. I coined the term the art of noticing in the book that I wrote. And I really spend a lot of time teaching my clients about noticing their physical bodies, because that's a key to maybe something's going on in your soul that you need to pay attention to. Like if you're having this anxiety or these feelings and you're ruminating, then, you know, something's going on somewhere that you need to give pause to.
I absolutely agree with that. In my diet book, The Eden Diet, I talk about a thing called the apple test, which is where if you think you're hungry, you have to imagine whatever food you want to eat on a plate next to an apple. And so if you're not physically hungry, if you aren't hungry enough to eat the apple, that means an emotion triggered you to want to eat. So that's a starting point. You know, what you're talking about is if, let's say you tell your client, well, if you feel anxiety, then I want you to stop and ask yourself, what were you thinking about, you know, in that moment? You know, what triggered it? You're looking for the triggers. Well, that's what I try to help people do. And sometimes in my pain management practice, that thing, that initial thing that they get their minds wrapped around is pain. So what I would tell them is, you know, whereas you might tell them, you know, if you're having an anxiety attack, then, you know, stop and think about what's been going on lately in your life, what happened yesterday, what happened today. You know, I'm not sure how you do it, but I'm going to guess.
Yeah, and then what do you feel in your physical body? Where do you experience that?
Yeah.
Do you notice you're shaky? Do you feel dizzy? Do you feel a knot in your stomach?
Right, you're trying to help them get their minds around this thing that's hard to pin down. It's a trigger, right? It's something that happened. It's not something that they recognize consciously. You're trying to help them see it, right? Well, sometimes I start, you know, the opposite way from you. I'll start with the physical pain because they're coming to me not because of anxiety, but because their back hurts or their hip hurts. And so what I'll tell them is, okay, the very next time your hip hurts, I want you to stop and think about what one word describes the emotion that you feel at that time. You know, what is the name of it? Is it fear? Is it anger? Is, you know, put a word on it. And, you know, it makes it physical. It makes it something that they can grab. And then from there I say, okay, when is the earliest time in your life you felt exactly the same way? And I help them go back to the root of that emotion, because sometimes, as you know, for sure in your line of work, things that happen now that act as triggers by themselves really may not be that significant, but the fact is they're feeding into that thing that happened 30 years ago.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? So I try, and it's hard in 20 minutes, but I try to get the patient to go back to the roots, because that root, that's like the biggest contributor, as you know, that initial event. Maybe it's that, you know, daddy used to beat mommy, and, you know, or mommy was a drinker, or you were abandoned, something gigantic like that. But it doesn't have to be gigantic. It could be a small thing from childhood, too, because when you're a kid, those little things feel big.
Sure they do, yeah. So how do we help people find those lies that trigger us to feel the pain, experience illness, and lead to the unwanted behavior?
Well, that took about 250 pages to explain.
Can you give us a shorthand of it?
Okay. Well, what I like to do in the office is if I begin to suspect that there's an emotional or even a spiritual root, because, you know, unforgiveness can, I think of that as a spiritual root.
Yes.
If I begin to suspect that there is a root cause like that, the main thing I have the patient do is try to identify what symptom, what is the thing they can get their mind around, what can they pin down as far as being a clue that something's going on at the subconscious level. Well, a lot of my patients have pain, but some of them just have addictive tendencies. Like, you know, I used to be a compulsive eater. After I lost all that weight, I didn't know how to eat normally, so I'd either overeat or undereat. And back when I was eating compulsively, for me, it would be the urge to go pig out on a pound of peanut M&Ms, okay? So, you know, and I don't have that anymore because I've really identified a lot of the roots that underlied my triggers. But if I were still in that, I'd have, you know, the desire to go eat a pound of M&Ms would be a clue. That would be a trigger. So if I felt that, or if I had a back pain, or let's say a rash or a migraine, some of these other physical things that can come about from stress, if I was experiencing one of those, or if my patient was, I'd say, okay, number one, recognize that as a clue that something's going on at the subconscious level. Number two, ask yourself, when is the very first time in my life I felt exactly the same way that I feel right now, emotionally? Okay, what was then? You go, what was going on in my life at that time? You know, how was my home life? You know, how were my personal relationships otherwise? And then, of course, you know, I believe God is in the middle of all of this, and he's longing to give us truth. You know, he gives us truth in our inmost places, according to Proverbs. If we ask, we have to get in the frame of mind of asking. So I say, pray about it. You know, Psalm 51:6 says, behold, you desire truth in the inner being. Make me, therefore, to know wisdom in my inmost heart. That's from the Amplified Bible. So what we need to do is ask God, Lord, where did this come from? You know, what was going on in my life? What lies do I believe about myself from this point in my life? You know, the point of origin of the you know, the lie, you know, or unforgiveness or whatever. And, you know, ask God, what lies did I believe about that? And what is the truth to replace the lies? It sounds easy, you know, in a two-minute blurb. But
no, but, you know, there's layers and layers of that for folks, certainly. And I mean, as a counselor, that's what I'm looking for, the beliefs. And so, like, can you give us an example of some of the core lies you see your patients buying into that would have to do with maybe addictive patterns or just, you know, pain or whatever they're going through?
I'll tell you what mine were to start off, because
okay.
I'm kind of my own patient here. Actually, maybe I should say victim. Mm-hmm. Is it okay if I call my patient? No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so some of the ones that I believed were that I'm bad, I'm stupid. And I'll tell you what, Rita, I have a couple doctor friends, several male doctor friends, who actually said, like, when I confessed to them that I became a doctor to prove to myself that I wasn't stupid, they said, me too.
Really?
Yes. And so just for your listeners, I want them to know, if you feel stupid, becoming a doctor is not going to fix that.
Yeah, because we believe those kinds of things, though.
That's, and sometimes people who are the quote-unquote high achievers, end quote, actually have a pathological reason for doing all those things. It's sort of like, works on steroids.
Yeah.
Okay, so if only I could get a PhD, if only I could, you know, become a CEO of a company, then I'll finally feel that I'm not stupid. No, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it's an illusion, really, because when we get there, then there's a whole host of other issues that we have to deal with.
That's exactly right. And so one of mine was I'm stupid, but then there's also I'm bad. I mean, how do you get worse than bad?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And just for the record, my parents did not tell me these things. These are things that I internalized as a child, I believe, under the influence of the accuser, because the accuser hates all of us, especially those of us destined to be Christian, I believe.
Okay. Yeah.
And he wants to do whatever he can to undermine our self-esteem, you know, our identities in particular.
Yes.
So he takes us out of the equation.
Well, how did the eating, the overeating, satisfy that? I'm bad. I mean, was that comfort for you then?
Yeah, it was momentary comfort. It was really a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there was also, I mean, it's complex because I'm 100% Italian and food.
So
is
am
really,
I.
Are you really?
Two Ritas, two Italian Ritas
Oh, wow.
On one show.
Right. Wow. So I don't know. Are you 100%?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, earlier today I was telling a story about how my parents and I used to go to a farm and pick Roma tomatoes and can our own tomatoes.
Wow.
And yeah, I mean, you understand then when the relatives from Canada, you know, get to your house at midnight for a vacation, you boil a thing of pasta at midnight.
Yep.
And so, you know, that was wrapped into my internalizing these lies about myself. You put the two things together, I overate.
Yeah.
Well, what if my parents were alcoholics? I really think I could have become an alcoholic. What if people in my family took illicit drugs? That could have been me. What if we were compulsive shoppers? That could have been me. I really think the compulsive tendencies were from anxiety, which I think the anxiety is from these lies that I believed about myself. I mean, if somebody told you were bad and stupid, wouldn't that make you anxious?
Sure, yeah.
Right. And so then I was just looking for an outlet to soothe my anxiety, so I ate. But, you know, could have been something else.
And you're so tiny now.
Well, I'm, you know, definitely not 207 pounds anymore.
Yeah. Well, how do you help people tear the lies down? I mean, as a counselor, obviously that's my job, but as a doctor, how do you do that?
You know, it's kind of cool because when I'm treating people's backs, I'm usually behind them and I'm touching them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to face me and I'm touching them. So that really breaks down some barriers. So I can kind of move forward sort of quickly. Plus, you know, I'm from back east. I'm kind of abrupt sometimes. So I might just come out and say, by chance, were you sexually abused? And I can't believe.
The people that will open up.
Yes.
Wow.
You know, I think people are just waiting.
Yeah. They want to tell their stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they need someone safe to be able to do that.
Right. And I'm female. I'm standing mm-hmm. behind them. I'm touching them. I mean, you know, things come out.
What are some of the questions that you ask or teach people to ask themselves before they reach for some of these false comforters, whether it be, you know, food or a pill or something to relieve their anxiety? What are they and what are you trying to get people to do here?
Well, there are a lot of questions. What you can start with is asking God. You could argue that you're asking your subconscious, that you're asking yourself, that you're asking God. Either way, I think God is involved because even if it is something in your subconscious, I believe he helps you dig it out. But it helps to ask these questions. And I would start with, Lord, do I believe a lie about myself? Lord, is there someone I need to forgive? Lord, do I have a hidden sin that could be causing me to react this way? And often it seems like there's a lie involved. And then you could say, Lord, does this relate to my childhood? Lord, what is the name of the emotion I feel right now? And for me, it would be more something like anxiety. I never really tended toward depression, but I would get nervous. And, you know, I would never have panic attacks, but I would just go eat to soothe myself. So, you know, Lord, is this, you know, anxiety rooted in a lie? Is it something from my childhood? Is it something that happened recently? Is it something about my husband, my mother, my father, my kids? Is it a fear that I have?
Yeah, the fear thing just can take you over. I mean, obviously, none of us want to experience pain. You know, we fear that. We fear pain. And fear affects us physiologically, too. I mean, for me, it was panic attacks about 15 years ago when my dad was sick and dying. And the fear attached to that was, you know, a loss of security. You know, I can't make it without my dad. You know, we were so close. And so the fear of, you know, all the things that had happened and all the losses before that, that I incurred, you know, just kind of a fear gripped me. And so I started having panic attacks.
Well, you know, I think it's funny because, you know, with all of your experience, you were able to recognize that, but there could even be facets of that that you haven't uncovered.
Yeah.
Because you're in the middle of it. And, you know, I'm in the middle of my own stuff, and sometimes I need someone else to help me. So, you know, it's good, you know, to get radical well-being, to read the questions, to, you know, use all those things. But sometimes you need an actual bona fide specialist counselor who's not you.
Right.
Yeah, to help you get in there with a little bitty. I mean, you can't be objective, even if you're asking God and you're working with yourself. God can give you all kinds of epiphanies that you would not have on your own. But I think it really helps to have another person in there.
Yeah, it absolutely does. Talk about sleep. You know, people who suffer chronic pain find it difficult to sleep. What do you do with folks like that? I mean, everybody's popping Ambien and, you know, Lunesta and all that stuff like Chiclets, but that's not curing the problem.
Right. Well, you know, I have a patient who really does well with melatonin, and she's into herbal, so she takes valerian root.
Mm-hmm.
And those things really seem to help her, but I'm not big in using herbals because, as you know, they're not regulated by the FDA. I don't like giving people sleeping pills either because, you know, I have so many patients who... they try one, that doesn't work. They try another, that doesn't work. Well, obviously, anxiety is a big problem for them. They're probably lying in bed with racing thoughts, and they can't go to sleep. So I do the same thing with them that I do with everyone else. So as you're lying there in bed, what is the name of the overriding emotion that you feel?
Yeah.
You know, and then the exact same thing, trace it back to the, when is the first mm-hmm. time in your life that you've, you know, felt those thoughts racing like that? What was going on in your life? You know, the earliest time you can remember feeling the same way.
Do you think are those pills addictive, the Ambien and stuff? I've heard so much bad stuff about it lately.
They sure are habit forming. You know, I don't mm-hmm. know the addictive thing. That's a sticky subject.
Well, don't you build up a tolerance to it after a while though? And you need more and more of it to fall asleep?
Yeah, I don't like giving patients mm-hmm. those medicines. Some people just are so tightly wound that I can't even talk to them unless they're medicated. You know, I can't help them in some way unless they, you know, I make them get some sleep. And so a little sleep is better than nothing. And, you know, but I can't stand having people on those meds long term. However, just like with narcotics, you know, there are some people who really need them. I think, you know, they're the definition of mercy. I believe these medicines can be used wisely, so I'm not necessarily advocating that your listeners go off of them.
Mm-hmm.
They should talk to their doctors about that. But I do think that it's just really easy to overuse medicine sometimes when other issues are at play.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with you. How about the fibromyalgia thing? Can you talk about that? Because that's a really huge topic today, and I know so many people who suffer with it.
I think I might tick some people off with my opinion. I think there definitely is a condition called fibromyalgia. I especially believe that it's largely physically driven in patients that have rheumatologic disorders like lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, and so forth. But I also think that it's overdiagnosed. And one of the reasons that I think that is because there's a whole other type of pain generator that most medical doctors don't know about, and it's called mechanical dysfunction. We have a lot of DOs here in Oklahoma. I'm an MD, but we have a lot of DOs, doctors of osteopathy, mm-hmm. and they learn about some stuff that we MDs don't learn about when they're in med school. You can get tightness in the soft tissues that prevents your spine from moving normally, and that causes pain. And so that's sort of my favorite thing to do in pain management is look for those soft tissue issues that I can fix with my hands.
So that would be through like manipulating people,
yes,
or deep massages,
yes,
and stuff like that?
Well, the first part, the manipulation.
Okay.
And there's several types of manipulation. Even within chiropractic, there are many, many different approaches. But within osteopathic manipulation, there are also many approaches. And so I found one approach seems to be exceptionally effective. It was developed by this doctor named Ed Stiles. He used
yes.
to practice in my hometown before I got here. And I've had about maybe 800 or 900 hours of his coursework.
Wow.
He's one of my mentors. And it just works great on people that have alignment issues.
Is that the Atlas thing, chiropractic with the Atlas? Because that's what I've done.
Yeah, there's a thing called NUCA in chiropractic where they really treat the top bone in your vertebral column.
Yes.
Called Atlas.
Mm-hmm.
And if that, I've talked to my mentor about that actually. He thinks that that would be great if that's your main problem. And lots of people have that. So he thinks it could work, but his approach is treat the tightest thing in the patient's body and go back and treat the next tightest thing and so forth. And so, you know, I use my hands a lot to help people who have these pain problems. Well, getting back to fibromyalgia is what we doctors call a diagnosis of exclusion. That means you can't have lupus, rheumatoid, you know, disc problem. You can't have another reason for having all these aches and pains. But we have no way to prove you have fibromyalgia. So it's my pet peeve because so many people are told they have it when they actually have something different, which you can't test, but most doctors don't know about it.
Wow.
So, yeah, what I'd love to do is to be able to screen people and say, you have alignment issues. No, you don't. Maybe you actually do have fibromyalgia. But some of those people with fibromyalgia who don't have alignment issues have emotional issues or spiritual issues that,
right. That
you know, doctors tend to be too afraid to try to dig out because, my gosh, you know, you have your family doctor. You know, economics of medicine are awful. Those guys have about 10 minutes with a patient, or they can't afford to keep their lights on because
Yeah. Reimbursement
is so low.
That's what's so sad.
Right. And so they're the ones who, you know, ought to be able to ask the patient. But you can't say, so, have you ever been sexually abused? Oh, time to go.
Yeah.
You can't do that. And so in a way, and they're not really prepared to deal with the answer.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. This just blew by. I could talk to you all day about this book. What are the takeaways? What do you want to leave listeners with today?
Well, number one, with God, all things are possible, Matthew 19:26. Don't give up because
yeah.
There are a lot of things there that standard of care and medicine don't really know how to find. So
awesome.
You just have to have perseverance. And to find out more about my material, which might help, you can go to RitaHancock.com.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Hancock. It was just a blessing to talk to you today, and God bless you for the work you're out there doing to heal people.
Oh, you too, Rita. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at ritaschulte.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.